The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Johnson, Judge Werke, Judge Gaitis, the Honorable Matthew E. Johnson presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. For the sake of the audio record, I will say that today's date is May 20, 2021. This panel of the court today has four cases on its agenda, two of which will be submitted with oral argument and two of which will be submitted without oral argument, solely on the briefs. The first case set for oral argument is number A21-202, State versus Kung, Lane, and Tao. I believe both attorneys are familiar with our procedures. Mr. Catchell, welcome back to Minnesota in a virtual sense. Ms. Ellison, of course, welcome back to the Court of Appeals where you have frequently appeared. Appellant will have 15 minutes for its initial argument. Respondents will have 15 minutes for their argument, and then appellants will have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal. Mr. Catchell, you can begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Judge Johnson, and may it please the court. Neil Catchell for the state of Minnesota. The state here sought to add a third degree murder charge. The district court refused, saying it was not bound by this court's decision in Noor and that the actus reus requires threatening more than one person. In the Chauvin case, this court then reversed the district court. We think that the Chauvin case should settle the matter here, as the district court's rationale was the same for the three defendants before you as it was for Mr. Chauvin. Now in this court, the defendants object, making an alternative mens rea argument that one cannot aid and abet third degree murder. And that argument should be rejected for two independent reasons. First, it's premature. If their argument sounds unfamiliar to you, it should. It was not an argument made in the trial court. It was never fully briefed here and is not an argument that was ever addressed by the trial court in the opinion you are reviewing today. The best evidence here is the defendant's own brief to this court, their very first brief, which said at page 4, quote, "The issue of whether aiding and abetting third-degree murder charges can be brought against respondents may be best presented first in the district court," and, quote, "this issue has not been briefed or litigated in the district court. Again, its timing may be premature at this juncture," end quote.
Mr. Catchell, it's my understanding that the state hasn't even committed to an accomplice liability theory. Is that correct?
Well, Your Honor, what we asked in the district court is to amend the charges to include a third degree murder charge, including any relevant theories of complicity relevant theories of liability was the exact language that we used before the district court. And that is what the district court rejected. And that is what we are seeking here. It's certainly the case that the Minnesota Supreme Court in cases like State versus DuVernay have said that principal and accessory liability are not different crimes. They're just different theories of the same crime. So they use the language in DuVernay. They said it's, quote, that they are not separate substantive offenses, and a principal theory of liability can be added at any point prior to a verdict or a finding. And Judge Gaitis, I think that's exactly our point, which is this argument is way premature. We very well may charge some or all of the defendants as principals, not as accessories, rendering any opinion you would issue advisory. And so that's why our first argument to you is the best thing to do, which is the ordinary thing this court does, is to say, bring your argument in the district court. That's, after all, what the three defendants themselves said was the best thing in their first brief. And it can be debated in the district court, decided, and then reviewed in the ordinary course on appeal. But I think it's a very dangerous thing to kind of rush in and to make this kind of alternative mens rea argument, particularly when it hasn't even been made in the district court at all. So that is the first argument, that first independent argument. And the second is just on the merits. We think the argument is just wrong. We definitely don't think you need to get there. But a defendant does aid and abet a crime of recklessness if he intentionally assists the reckless act with knowledge of the principal's recklessness. The Minnesota Supreme Court in matter of SWT's welfare said exactly that. And so, you know, for those two reasons, basically, we think it's premature. The Chauvin case by the Court of Appeals, we think, sets exactly the right path here, which is to say, you know, there the defendant made some alternative arguments before the Court of Appeals. And the Court of Appeals said, the thing to do there is to make your arguments in the district court first, and then we can review them. And I think this court is almost, I don't want to push the point, but either formally or close to formally bound by Chauvin, because the whole point of stare decisis is to treat like cases alike. And it'd be a very odd result if three defendants get to hear their alternative argument now, but one defendant didn't and had to go back to the district court for it. The only other thing I guess I'd say is just in terms, I think the best argument on the merits that my friend on the other side is something about a kind of mismatch in liability theories, that a principal can't have a different mens rea than an accomplice. And we just think that flouts the statute's language, which is found at page 10 of our reply brief. We think it flouts precedent in SWT welfare, as our brief explains, and as I was just saying. And then most importantly, because the mens rea of accomplice and principal liability are really two different things. And it's kind of like comparing apples and oranges. They focus on different things, because principal liability focuses on a defendant's state of mind vis-a-vis the victim, whereas accomplice liability focuses on an accomplice's state of mind vis-a-vis the principal. Was the accomplice intending to aid the principal? And we absolutely agree, as our brief says, that there has to be an intent requirement for complicity. We certainly don't want the getaway driver or something like that the gas station who puts gas in the car of the getaway driver to be liable when that person's unwitting or unknowing. But that isn't this case. This case is very much like SWT welfare, where there is some intentional decision to aid an accomplice. And, you know, I think case after case, not just in this jurisdiction with SWT, but in most other jurisdictions, the SWT's case cited the Wisconsin Supreme Court case in State versus Asfor, in which the defendant made exactly the argument that the three defendants make here, that you kind of can't intentionally aid and abet a negligent or reckless act. And they rejected that for exactly the reasons we're saying. The Nevada Supreme Court in Desai versus State, Colorado and People versus Wheeler, and, you know, Texas and other jurisdictions as well. So we just don't think this has precedent either in Minnesota or outside of Minnesota. And our fundamental point to you is, if you think that there is anything here to the three defendants' argument, that's just the reason why it should be raised on remand before the district court. We are not here before you saying they have forfeited this argument for all time, that they can't raise it or anything like that. We very much agree that they can raise the argument that they're trying to raise here, this alternative mens rea argument. It's just got to be raised first in the district court. That is the ordinary process.
You're urging us not to reach the merits of the argument, but respondents' alternative argument is that aiding and abetting third degree murder is an impossible charge, that it's just an impossibility. We would have the discretion as an appellate body to answer that question. What's your greatest argument in support of us also sending that back to the trial court for argument and resolution?
Well, Your Honor, I think you have maybe a tiny bit of discretion, but it is pretty tiny, because the State versus Coleman decision from this court says, you know, you could only reach such a thing if there would be no disadvantage to the parties and judicial efficiency. And here, I think both of those things cut exactly the other way. I mean, the whole point of the Court of Appeals being an error correction court is to allow issues to properly ventilate first in the lower court and get the benefit of those courts' views. And that's particularly the case here, because this is an interlocutory appeal under Minnesota Rule 28.04, where the briefing time is necessarily very truncated. In fact, when the three defendants filed their brief late, they said, quote, the expedited pretrial briefing schedule makes it difficult. And so, you know, that hurried posture is really, I think, exactly the wrong way to decide a question about impossibility. Now, there's always legal arguments, Judge Werke, like impossibility, that can be raised, you know, that can, you know, stop an indictment or stop a count of an indictment. That's true in every criminal case. But I think the ordinary process is for the court to reach those issues on the district court to reach them first, and then for them to be brought up either on direct appeal after a conviction, or possibly sometimes under Rule 28.02, if the interests of justice permit an interlocutory appeal by the defendant. But Judge Werke, as you yourself said, you know, last year in Willie versus State, this court is an error correction court, and the Court of Appeals can only correct errors that appear in the lower court's decision. And here, that impossibility argument that they point to is not found in the lower court's decision. It was just not raised.
And Mr. Katyal, just to be clear, none of this was presented to the district court. The merits of this issue were not argued by the state, but also not raised by the defense. Is that right?
We basically said in our brief to the district court that these charges should be added. We cited some cases explaining why. We didn't deal with impossibility one way or the other because it just was simply never put before the district court at all. And the district court, in his opinion, didn't reach these impossibilities at all, impossibility arguments. They reached the same exact judgment for the three defendants as for Officer Chauvin, saying basically that the actus reus requires more than one, picking up on Judge Johnson's dissent in Noor. And for reasons of horizontal equity, and this goes back to my point to my last answer to Justice Werke, yes, maybe sometimes you have discretion, but this is probably the very worst case to exercise that discretion, because in a separate case involving the exact same facts, involving the exact same opinion, this court said these alternative arguments have to be decided by the district court first. And that's all we're saying. They can raise these arguments in the district court. You'll get to decide them later, but you'll get to decide them with the full view of the record and the fact that there may be, you know, if there is actually only an accessory theory of liability that is ultimately the evidence at trial. It may be that some of these folks are principals. If there are no other questions, thank you.
It appears there are none. Thank you, Mr. Katyal. As I said earlier, you will have an opportunity for rebuttal. Counsel for respondents, Ms. Ellis, you may begin.
Thank you. May it please the court, Deborah Ellis, and I'm representing the respondents. I am surprised by the state's argument that this should be remanded. I had suggested a number of times perhaps a stay was appropriate. That was always rejected by the state. As a procedural background, it was on February 11th that Judge Cahill denied the motion of the state to amend the complaints against the respondents to add aiding and abetting third degree murder. And in response to the state's pretrial appeal, we suggested that there was another basis besides, whether the particular person prohibition applied, but also that there was a legal impossibility of aiding and abetting the depraved mind third degree murder. And that is an appropriate argument that can be made. The rule 2904 subdivision 6 allows us to defend on any basis. And the court, and this court has said a number of times that the court would affirm a lower court's decision on any basis supported by the record and the law. And so in that regard, I believe this court is in as good a position as any. This is going to be an issue of first impression as to whether under Minnesota law, and given the decision by the Supreme Court in Coleman giving further clarification of the elements of third degree murder, whether it is possible, legally possible, to be an accomplice, to aid and abet and join. And I disagree with Mr. Katyal that the mindset can be different. I would suggest this court with the panel of three is in optimal position to decide this legal issue. I think that I would reference the court to Professor Lefebvre and at section 13.2C. And Lefebvre has always said that the accomplice, the principal, and the accessories must be of the same mindset. And the interesting thing here is that with Coleman, the Supreme Court said it's just not a reckless act. That reckless act has to be with disregard to human life. And further talked about that being indifference. It is almost a loss or a lack of moral consciousness. So while an accomplice can aid a negligent act or even a reckless act, it takes more than that to aid and abet a third degree depraved mind, because you would have to intentionally aid a indifference, really. It's an irrational frame of mind of somebody else.
So, Ms. Smith, if we would go ahead and exercise our authority to consider your rather novel secondary argument, as far as that legal theory is concerned, we would need to have facts in the record that would support making a decision one way or the other. Can you point us to what facts in the record we could rely on in making that decision?
I disagree, Judge Werke, that you would need facts from the record. I think that would be an argument if it was below and it was a challenge to probable cause. But this argument relies on an interpretation of two statutes, the liability for crimes of others and third degree depraved mind, a murder.
So, are you suggesting then that it's a de novo review and we would make that as a legal determination?
Yes.
Well, just to follow up on that, Ms. Ellis, that what would we be reviewing given that the district court didn't decide this issue?
It would be upholding the district court's order on application of the law, which would be on a separate basis. And this court, I am often in the position of the appellant, but this court will uphold a ruling of the lower court if there is a basis on the record or on the law. And in this case, we submit the law supports a finding and a conclusion that aiding and abetting third degree depraved mind murder is a legal impossibility under our state statutes. And we'd urge the court to affirm the lower court's ruling, albeit on different grounds on which the lower court ruled.
That case law on which you rely, in which the appellate court may affirm on alternative grounds, isn't it always true or usually true that there's the condition there, so long as the alternative grounds were presented below? Quite often parties will make multiple arguments. District court will decide the case based on only one ground and leave the others undecided. And in that situation, an appellate court has, so that issue has been fully briefed and fleshed out. And then it's a different situation than this, where there were no arguments in the district court about the impossibility of aiding and abetting third degree murder, right?
That's absolutely right. And I can't say for sure, there are a number of cases that have held, if we find a basis to support or affirm, we will do it, whether it's on a different legal premise, but I can't say whether or not in each of those cases that premise was also argued in the court below.
And Ms. Ellis, am I correct in concluding based on my review of the record that these respondents didn't even respond to the state's motion to amend the complaint?
I can't speak to that. I'm not sure right now. Thank you. Sorry.
Your brief is silent with respect to the Chauvin opinion. I take it, just to be extra clear, I take it you would concede that that opinion binds this court, that we're bound by Neuer, and correct?
Yes, but the Chauvin decision does not deal with the aiding and abetting issue. And I think in the court below, it's always been viewed that the state was pursuing the respondents on accomplice theories, aiding and abetting, and that's what the district court denied, is a motion to amend the complaints against these three to add aiding and abetting third degree murder. Now, if the state is saying, well, we intend to charge them as principals, then I think Chauvin does apply, because then my issue of aiding and abetting is moot on that point. because I think Mr. Katyal is saying, well, we might go and bring a different theory besides aiding and abetting, but it's always been interpreted, and what the district court ruled on was a motion to amend to add aiding and abetting third degree. Unless there's other questions submitted to the court, thank you.
It appears there are none. Thank you, Ms. Ellis. Thank you for your arguments. Mr. Katyal, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you. The district court here said we couldn't add a third degree murder charge because this court's decision in Noor was not binding. That decision was reversed in Chauvin, and that should end the matter here. This appeal concerns the same facts, the same procedural posture, and the very same opinion below. Now, my friend Ms. Ellis said she was surprised by our argument about remand, but our argument is not just remand, it's reverse and remand. That's always been our consistent position. That's what we said in our motion to dismiss brief at pages 10 to 11, that it's premature for this court to reach these issues now when they weren't raised or decided in the district court. And most interestingly, that was, of course, her position, that it was premature in her first brief to this court. And then her merits brief and now her oral argument just now takes a different view. And we think she was right the first time. We've always opposed just a pure stay of this because that would not provide enough jurisdiction to the district court to ventilate precisely this issue. It would divest the court of jurisdiction to hear these alternative mens rea arguments. And so if we want her issue decided, the best and most proper way and most efficient is to send this to the district court for them to do so. Now she cited Rule 29.04 Subdivision 6 as her authority. That is a provision about Supreme Court review, not about the review of this court, the Court of Appeals. And it's an entirely unsurprising rule because the Supreme Court, unlike the Court of Appeals, is not simply an error-correcting court. She cites nothing to say we can go around ordinary rules. She says the Court of Appeals can rely on alternative grounds. We absolutely agree with that. But as Judge Johnson pointed out, those alternative grounds have to first be reached in the district court, or at least raised in the district court, if not passed on by the district court. And she herself said in response to that question that that's absolutely right, that that precedent is not applicable. She then cited the new Minnesota Supreme Court decision in Coleman as a reason why you should get involved, but we think that entirely cuts the other way. You have no briefing before you whatsoever on the Coleman decision. No one's briefed that. It'd be the height of danger for the Court of Appeals to reach it now with no briefing, no ventilation by the district court and the like. And so at the end of the day, if you granted her everything she said about the merits of her argument about impossibility, and we think that it just defies SWT welfare and everything else, but even if you granted them that you thought there was something there, the best way for this court to ultimately resolve that issue is the ordinary way, the Chauvin way. Decide this issue now about Noor, reverse the district court's decision, which blocked us from amending the charges, send it back to the district court, and she's free to raise these alternative arguments at that point. If there are no further questions.
It appears there are no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Katyal. Thank you, Ms. Ellis. Thank you for your arguments. The case is submitted. The court will issue its opinion in writing within 90 days.